All right, we're beginning here with the Masechet Nedarim, and as we do before all Masechta, we'll try to give a little broader overview and understanding of the Masechta. The first question, obviously, is what is the Masechet doing here in, first of all, Seder Nashim? And number two is, why is it after Masechet Ketubot? So with regards to this question, the Gemara in Sota actually addresses it partly as to the location of Masechet Nedarim. The reason being that in Masechet Ketubot, we had a perek that dealt with Nedarim, that dealt with the issue of Neder between a husband and wife. And therefore, in relationship to that, or in connection to that, the Masechet Nedarim is found here subsequent to Masechet Ketubot. The truth is that if you look in the Chumash, that in the beginning of Parshat Matot, it says, "Vayidaber Moshe al Roshei Matot libnei Yisrael lemor, zeh davar asher tziva Hashem, ish ki yidor neder laHashem, o ish ava shvua, le'esori sar al nafsho, lo yachel dvaro, k'chol yotze mipiv yaseh." So here's one of the major sources of Nidarim in the Torah. And afterwards, the Parsha in Parshat Matot continues and says, Isha ki tidor neder laHashem, and deals with the issues of a woman taking a neder. And with regards to a woman taking a neder, the ability of a husband and a father to nullify or be mefir that neder. So as the Rambam points out in the Parsha Mishnayot, that the major Parsha of the Torah that deals with Nedarim is mostly associated with the woman and the rights of the husband and the father to nullify those Nedarim. So in that sense, Masechet Nedarim belongs within the context of Seder Nashim because its major theme, at least in the Torah, is in relationship to Nedarim that deal with a woman and the ability of the father and the husband to nullify those Nedarim. So for those two reasons, Masechet Nedarim is found here in Seder Nashim, and then followed by Masechet Nazir, which is also a derivative of Masechet Nedarim. Now with regards to both Masechet Nedarim and Masechet Nazir, you have two issues. One issue is that the Perush of Rashi, or what is called Rashi, is unlikely that it is Rashi. Even in Masechet Nazir, it's more common to be called it the Mifaresh, the one who explained it, because there it's very clear that it's not Rashi. But including even the Rishonim already are noting that what we find here in Masechet Nedarim is also not Rashi, because we see the Rishonim quoting sometimes quotes from Rashi that we don't have in our Rashi in Masechet Nedarim. That could derive for one of two reasons. Either the version of Rashi that we have here is an earlier version, a less redacted version of Rashi, or because what we have here is not Rashi. For that reason, there's heavy reliance on the Ran, and the Perush HaRan, which is the major Rishon, who wrote a Perush on Masechet Nedarim, and therefore he becomes basically the primary Perush that people use in order to understand Masechet Nedarim. We don't have that option when it comes to Masechet Nazir, but at least with Masechet Nedarim, the Ran is the major focus of the Rishonim. There is Tosafot and Arosh, and we'll refer to them generally in cases where they disagree or they can enlighten us as to what the Ran is saying. In addition, the same thing applies to the language of the Gemara itself, which is that the Gemara here has language that is not as clear or well redacted as it is by other Masechtot. You can send out the Mekorot on that. We'll discuss it much more in detail when we come to Masechet Nazir, where there it's much more apparent and much more obvious that there is a problem with the language. Now, with regards to Nedarim in general, there are different types of Nedarim that can come about. There's something called Nidrei Hekdesh, which is actually the primary case of Nedarim that we find throughout Tanakh, which is someone is taking a neder and obligating themselves in providing something or making something Hekdesh, which is that they will bring something to the Mikdash or that they will make this item into Kodesh. But that is not what our Masechet is dealing with, because otherwise it should have been found in Seder Kodoshim. And within Seder Kodoshim, we do have a Masechet that deals slightly with that issue, and that is Masechet Arachin. Otherwise, it's subsumed under the other Masechtot in Seder Kodoshim. We also have other types of Nidarim. They're not necessarily Nidarim, but Shvuot, which is also a type of neder. We'll see today's daf, what's the difference between a shvua and a neder. But shvuot also are found within our Masechta, Masechet Nedarim. There is a set of shvuot that have nothing to do with our Masechta, and those are Shvuot that relate to Beit Din. They are related in the sense of when they're taken or how they're taken, but those are under the auspices of Beit Din and have to do with a person's relationship to the Beit Din or in regards to testimony. Shvuot Dayanim, Shvuot Eidut, Shvuot Shomrim, of those Shvuot are found in Masechet Shvuot, which is found in Nezikin, because of its relationship to Beit Din and the necessity to bring those or have those Shvuot, which usually is in the context of something that deals with Nezikin. Therefore, that's found in Nezikin. Our Masechta here, Masechet Nidarim, as the Ran points out, is Masechet Zuhi Binyan Nidrei Isur. That here we're dealing with Nidarim that are not of Nidrei Hekdesh, not of the nature of Shavuot, but rather Nidrei Isur, where a person makes something that otherwise is Mutar, a Sur on themselves. Now, in a sense, that is a derivative of Hekdesh, because the way that one makes something into Hekdesh is they take something that otherwise was mundane, something that had nothing to do with Hekdesh, and then they delineate it or designate it to be for Hekdesh. By doing so, they make it a sur to everyone else, except for its primary use now, which would be for Hekdesh. In the same way, Nidarim over here also function in the same way, which is someone takes a neder to take something which otherwise was mutar and make it a sur, and now make it into a something that is no longer available to everyone. As opposed to Nidre Hekdesh, where automatically when something is Hekdesh, it's a sur to everybody, that includes the one who took the neder, as well as any other party. On the other hand, Nidre Yisur, you can direct who the Yisur is associated with. You can specify that the Yisur only applies to the individual taking the neder, to other individuals, to a large group of individuals. You can, within the neder, specify who the Yisur applies to. And therefore, it's much more managed in the sense that the Yisur can be directed much more so than Hekdesh, which is a global Isur. Once something is Hekdesh, nobody can benefit from that item. Now, with regards to Nidrei Isur, we generally find them manifest themselves in two ways. One is Nidrei Isur, which is that a person wants, for whatever reason, to either help themselves do a mitzvah or osir themselves in something as a protective mechanism. And therefore, they take a neder in order to be mizareis themselves, in order to encourage themselves either to do something or to refrain from doing something. On the other hand, we find the majority of nidarim deal with yachasim, relationships between two people. And if you look through the Masechta, you can see that most of them come out of what we'll call anger and altercations between people, and that nidarim are really an issue of ben adam lechaveiro. And we're going to see in our Mishnah, in a sense, that when someone uses the Lashon of Nidrei Rishaim, as opposed to Nidrei Kshirim, then the Mishnah tells us that Nidrei Rishaim has impact, Nidrei Kshirim does not have impact, because in general, Kshirim don't take Nidarim. Only Rishaim, quote-unquote, it's not the Russia in the real sense, but people who take Nidarim, not necessarily people who are thinking so well or carefully through what they are saying, because it has a major impact on the relationship between people. It's usually taken in a negative context, not in a positive context. We'll see in our Masechta that there are exceptions to that rule, but again, they are exceptions. The majority of the cases are cases where a person's taking a neder and it affects the relationship with their neighbor. And for that reason, Chazal have a very negative view of nidarim, and in general, encourage one not to take nidarim and to refrain from taking nidarim. Just as an aside, I'll just note this, that I think that the Hatarat Nidarim or Kol Nidrei that precedes Yom HaKippurim really is a outcome of the majority case of when nidarim are taken, which is the nidarim that are taken ben adam lechaveiro, and that hakpada ben adam lechaveiro, and the necessity for Kol Nidrei and Hatarat Nidarim before Yom HaKippurim is that for a person searching for mechila, going into Yom HaKippurim, that a person needs to release all of those problems or nidarim that somehow led the relationships of Ben Adam Lechaviro down a path that is very negative. We want to undo those prior to Yom HaKippurim. Now, with regards to a neder, as far as the Torah is concerned, the Torah only gives prescriptive dinim with regards to neder. The Torah doesn't necessarily take a position on Nidarim as to whether Nidarim are good or bad. It's just prescriptive, which is similar to a get. The Torah doesn't tell one that they have to get divorced, but rather, if one does get divorced, here is the prescription, here is the dinim in the Torah of how to get divorced through a get p'turim. The same is true with regards to Nidarim. We read the pasuk before, which is ish ki dor neder l'Hashem. Ki means when. If a person takes a neder, once you've taken the neder, do not profane your words. Whatever one has articulated, they must do. So the Torah is prescriptive in the sense that once you've taken the neder is binding. And since the neder is binding, therefore do not profane the neder, and please upkeep the neder. That's the right thing to do. So again, the Torah doesn't take a position necessarily about the neder, but rather is prescriptive in the sense that once you've taken the neder, this is what you need to do, or this is how you handle the situation in which a neder is taken. There are times the Gemara itself will deal with, the psukim are actually contradictory with regards to nidarim, as to whether they are positive or negative. That really comes out of Mishlei. One case it says that whenever you take a neder, make sure that you keep the neder. On the other hand, it also tells us that better to have not taken a neder than to take a neder. So in that case, you have differing views about Nidarim, and the Gemara tries to reconcile that difference or those opposing views. But in general, the Torah takes no view of it. The other side of Nidarim is something called Hatarat Nidarim, that we already saw in the Mishnayot in Chagigah. The Mishnah in Chagigah says that Hatarat Nidarim are things that are Tluim Bavir, things that are almost non-existent. They Kimat are not mentioned in the Torah, explicitly for sure not. Implicitly, maybe you can get that out of the Torah, but a Torah Nedarim is the vehicle by which one can undo a neder. And that, we still see later on in the Masechta, there's Hafarat Nedarim, which is explicit in the Torah. That's the ability of a husband or a father to nullify the neder of the daughter or the wife. And in that case, there are rules about how that happens and how it works. And we've seen also in Masechet Ketubot that is only prospectively, that one is mefer the neder, that only takes effect from the moment that the hafara is put in place forward. On the other hand, Hatarat Nidarim works in a different way, and Hatarat Nidarim works in a method by which the chacham undermines the neder retroactively. It's as if the neder never existed. And that comes about for one of two reasons. Either it comes about because of charata, person has a certain amount of regret about the neder, that in itself is not sufficient, and we'll see that in the Masechta. Charata is not a reason for Hatarat Nidarim, but charata in certain instances can shed light on the nature of the neder, or otherwise the main vehicle for Hatarat Nidarim is the person did not think through the possibilities or the ramifications of the neder, and the person now says, had I known this information, I would have never taken the neder originally, and that's why it works as a way that l'mafreya undoes the neder. Now this all relies on how nidarim come about, and that is that there are really different components to a neder. A neder requires, first of all, hafla'ah. That's really mentioned by nazir. Ki afli, which is the lashon that is used by a nazir, there it requires hafla'ah. Hafla'ah means that a person has to articulate clearly what they are trying to do. And therefore, neder also has that same requirement, because in the nizirut, it's called a neder nizirut. So hafla'ah is one of those requirements of a neder, is that a person articulates exactly what they want to say. In addition to that, we have a requirement of piv v'libo shavim, that a person has to not only articulate the neder, but in his heart, or in his understanding, he needs to have a certain unification between that which he's articulating and that which he feels. He has to articulate what is in his heart or what his kavanah, what his intent is. Each one alone is not sufficient. Kavanah by itself is not sufficient to engender a neder. Neither is hafalah, neither is articulation. You need both. You need articulation and kavanah talev, and you need them to align. When you have an alignment between the hafalah and the kavanah, that's where you have a neder. So a neder requires that aspect, which is both articulation and kavanat alev. Here in the first perek of this Masechta deals with this problem of articulation. If a person doesn't articulate properly the neder, does it still take effect? The last piece of what a neder requires is really actually subject to a machloket rishonim, is how functionally a neder comes about. According to most of the Rishonim, you can see that here in both the Tosafot and in the Rosh, that it comes about through what's called hatpasa, which is that you utilize an existing vehicle of Isur and you move it over to Nidarim. If you're trying to be Oser, something that's otherwise Mutar, you're saying, I want to make that item that is otherwise totally fine, totally mundane, and now I want to change its status, how do I go about changing its status? Now, as far as Hekdesh is concerned, we know that we have vehicles like that through the Torah to make something Hekdesh. A person can declare something Hekdesh. But with regards to Isurim, which deal with outside of the world of Hekdesh, what is the vehicle by which I make it Asur? So according to most of the Rishonim, I use Hekdesh, which is an existing vehicle that allows one to change something otherwise that is Mutar into Isur, and now I lift it from there and bring it over to the world of Nidarim. And that's what they call Hatpasa, which is the relationship between Hekdesh and this item. And you can see that in the Rosh, here he says, Ikar neder amur b'Torah, the major neder at Sona Torah, hu shimatpis ha-chefetz b'devar ha-ne'asar, is that he connects the object with something that is otherwise asur, ideally isur ha-peh, through articulation. That means that a person takes, for instance, a tree, takes food, any other item that he wants to make asur, and he says, this item is just like this other item being hekdesh, this other item which is kodesh, was otherwise mutar, and you made it into isur. So just like you made this item into isur, I now want to also take this other object here and make it in the same way asur. And that is the vehicle by which one makes the object into isur. He has to take something what's called davar hane'asar, something that you have made into isur, something that you control the isur for, but not something that is already asur. So for instance, if a person tries to take a neder through connecting it to, for instance, Basar Chazir. Person says that I want this object to be Asur, just like Basar Chazir is Asur. In that instance, it won't work, because Basar Chazir is inherently Asur. It's not Asur because of something that you did to it, something how you changed its status. And therefore, a neder only works by connecting it, or the object, to something that otherwise was mutar, and you made asur. You can see that in the Tosafot as well. He says, the ikar neder hu, kishmat pis achefetz badabar. Again, it's when you connect it to another object. The Ran, on the other hand, here makes a statement, which is subject to much controversy, especially because the Ran himself is ambiguous in this term, which is that he's soter himself in numerous places, as was pointed out before. Here he quotes and tells you to look in the Gemara and Shavuot, where the Ran himself seems to say otherwise. But here he says, Ikar neder hu, shumar davar ze asur alai. So he says the major neder, or the primary neder, is where this person makes something that's mutar asur to himself. Ben shit pisu b'dvar acher, ben shlohit pisu. That's whether he connects it to another object or does not connect it to another object. Zu neder amur b'Torah. That is the neder that is specified in the Torah. And so therefore the Ran over here is of the opinion that hatpasa is not an integral part of a neder. It is a method or a vehicle for nidarim, but it is not the ikar or the only way to create a neder. You can independently create a neder without ever engaging in hatpasa. Right? Why it works or how it works, the Ran will mention in other places, but more importantly, the Ran himself is soter himself in other places, seems to indicate that hatpasa is a necessity or necessary part of creating a neder, one of the three major ways in which one creates a neder. Now, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, our Mishnah is now going to focus or concentrate on the issue of language. If one uses a different form of language, how does that affect the neder? So there, the Mishnah deals with two concepts. One is a concept called kinuyim, and the other concept is a concept called yad. Kinuyim, like it suggests, the word kinuy today is used as a nickname or a replacement, some sort of way to express something, not using the primary way that you would describe the object, but rather using some other function to create it. So kinuyei nidarim over here is using a language that is not exactly the language you would expect, but an alternative language. Does that language work over here? We'll have a machloket in tomorrow's daf between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to the derivation or development of kinuim. Where do they come from? So Rabbi Yochanan believes that the kinuim come from other languages. They are actually borrowed, or they are words that mean the same thing in other languages, and then we basically reincorporated them into the Hebrew language. So for instance, if you had a word which would be used in the Nedarim called Korban, Korban would be a vehicle by which you could express a neder, because that's exactly what we're looking for, this hatpasa, this idea that I want to connect between the object that I'm trying to make asur to something else that has this ability to be asur. Korban is a classic case. Here a person makes an animal that otherwise is chulin into a korban, he's makdish the animal. So if a person expresses a neder, korban alai kikar zeh, that this loaf of bread is like a korban to me, that is a way to express a neder. What happens if instead of using the lashon of korban, a person uses a language that we're going to see over and over and over again? In our masechta is konam, koneach, kones. He uses some sort of other language that is similar to this. What has he done? Has he articulated a neder or not? So Rabbi Yochanan says these words were taken in by other languages, and seemingly they were mishubash. They were taken in by the other languages, but while they were imported or brought in by these other languages, they made slight changes to the word, the same way that it happens today in Hebrew or it happens in English as well. You find that certain words, for instance, French words that are taken into the English language are mispronounced in English, like a cul de sac, which is a dead end. Over there, we pronounce the words not similar to the way that they would be pronounced in French. And the same thing is true in Hebrew. If they borrow a word from English, including psychotherapy or any other word that begins with the P, where the P is not pronounced in the English language, yet in Hebrew, they pronounce the P, and they would call that psychotherapy, and they would pronounce the P. So here you have words that are imported, but when those words are imported, they are imported in such a manner that they are not pronounced in the same way that they are pronounced in the Hebrew language. So that's the way that Rabbi Yochanan says that these kinuim developed. On the other hand, Reish Lakish says these are lashon shubadu lahem chachamim liot nodim bo. These are languages that the chachamim made up in order to give people vehicles by which to engage in nidarim. So instead of using the word korban, they came up with the words that are other alternatives in terms of the way to create nidarim. So now, in both of these instances, the way that it works is, as the Ram points out, the whole way that language works is that language is really a social contract or social agreement between parties that a certain word will represent something. So just like the word Qurban represents the making of something dedicated to Hashem, so too, parties can come to an agreement that another word, like konam, or koneach, or kones, can also have that same meaning, or can create that same effect, which is that language, in general, is just agreement between parties. There's nothing inherent in language. Language is an agreement between different groups of individuals that they agree that the meaning of the word is such, or it describes such a phenomenon. So too, when the Chachamim come up with this Lashon, with these languages, even though they're, quote-unquote, made-up languages, once everyone agrees that they function in this manner, they're no different than the key word that one would use, like korban. Even the kinuim function in the same way. That's the first thing. Yadot and nidarim, which again, the Mishnah is going to spend time on, or like we find in other places, not just by nidarim, one of the key places that we find this is by tuma and tahara, that yadot are a vehicle for the conveyance of tuma and tahara. A yad is where you're not talking about the item itself, but rather you're talking about something that is an extension of the item, and that extension allows you access to the item. For instance, a pot or a pan, you have a handle on a pot or a pan. The major item that we're talking about is the pot or the pan. The handle is the ability to move the pot or the pan. It gives you the ability to work with that item. So the handle is a, in a sense, derivative of the primary item, but makes the item functional in certain ways. And the way that Yad works here by Nidarim is in a similar way, which is that the Yad is, if one does not articulate fully the Neder, are there ways that even when you don't articulate fully, we can assume or we can look at the language that you said and understand what you meant? So that what you're saying becomes a handle to the primary objective of what you were saying. So you meant something, and you meant to get to a certain end game, and you use the language that was not fully expressive of that. Can we see that language as a handle, as a way to get to the full articulation that you really wanted? And that is what a yad is known as. So therefore, our Mishnah deals with these two items, a yad of a neder and a kinui of a neder. Again, our perek, the first perek, deals with one aspect of nidarim, which we talked about before, which is the aspect of articulation. The ability to have a neder comes with hafla'ah, with full articulation. Are there other vehicles like kinui, which is not a full articulation, but using other words to express something, or a yad, which is the lack of complete articulation? Can either of those cases still create a neder? And that's what our Mishnah begins with. Kol kinuyei nidarim, kinidarim. That one uses a kinui for a neder is the equivalent of saying a full neder. And again, based on whether it's Rabbi Yochanan or Reish Lakish, if you use these other languages, do these other languages function in the same way as the primary word? For instance, the word korban is replaced by these other words, either from other languages or through a language created by the Chachamim. Do they function in the same way as nedarim? And our Mishnah tells us yes, that if you use such a vehicle, such a word, it's the equivalent of articulating the word itself. V'charamim k'charamim. Now here you have a machloket between the Ran and other Rishonim as to how charamim k'charamim function over here. Tosafot, for instance, says that when we're talking about charamim, we're talking about charamim that are found in the Torah, that are found at the end of Sefer Vayikra, which includes making something into hekdesh, is dedicating something to Hashem. And therefore, the nature of this Mishnah is addressing things not just nidre isur, but also nidre hekdesh, in the sense of, if you make something into cherem, can you make it into cherem through these alternative languages that are not exactly like the word cherem? On the other hand, the Ran believes over here that when we're talking about charamim, we're not talking about charamim shel hekdesh, but rather using the vehicle of cherem to be matpis onto nidarim. You're going to use this as your vehicle for making something asur. So instead of using the word cherem, you use the word cherek, cherech, cheref. Same way that we had it by nidarim, you change the word korban, so too by the word cherem. But according to the Ran, he thinks that it's all within the context of the same theme of our Mishnah, which is nidre isur, which is only dealing with the nidarim of isur, not nidre hekdesh. On the other hand, Tosafot over here clearly says that the charamim that we're speaking of over here are the cherme kohanim or cherme bedek abayit, whether in the same way that nidarim work, that you can have kinui function or yadayim function, is that also true by charamim? And according to the reading of the Tosafot of our Mishnah, the answer is yes, that you can use these same vehicles of yadayim and kinuyim by charamim as well. According to the Ran, that would not be clear as to whether those things work by Hekdesh as well. Here, it's clearly within the context of Nidre Yisur, and then you'd have to ask the question, does it have application in Hekdesh, or is this only something unique to Nidre Yisur? U'shvuot kishvuot. And the same is true when one is trying to engage in a shvua, to take an oath of some sort. You can also use a kinoi, or one can use a yad, in order to exercise that right to take a shvua. And the same is true with nizirut kinizirut. Nizirut, again, we said before, is a subset of neder. It's a subset of neder because it's basically taking a person who otherwise is mutar and now changing their status by engaging in what's called a neder nizirut. Now there, again, the Torah is prescriptive. The Torah tells you if you take a neder nizirut, these are the halachot that are associated with nizirut. The Torah doesn't necessarily take a stand on whether a Nazir is good or bad. We'll get to that in Masechet Nazir as well. We'll discuss as to whether it's good or bad or what the Torah's view of Nizirut is. But over here, we're talking about a subset of Nidarim called Nazir and Nizirut. And there too, Yad and Kinui function in the same way. Now, the Mishnah goes on to state examples of Yadayim. Examples of these extensions where a person doesn't articulate completely what they are mean to say, and gives examples of where it works. What's clear in the Mishnah is that it skipped the whole concept of kinuyim, and now the Gemara will ask, what's going on here? You opened up with this kinuyim, you didn't even mention yadayim, and now all of a sudden the Mishnah jumps to these yadayim. And that is, if a person says, mudrani mimcha, mufrishani mimcha, miruchukani mimcha, shani ochel lecha. So in all of these lashonot, person says, mudrani, mufrishani, and miruchukani. In all of these language, his intent is pretty clear, which is that he wants to mudar, he wants to separate the individual, but through a neder from this object. Mifrushani, I am separated. Miruchukani, I am distant. It's clear what the intent is of the individual, but he did not express it in what we call the proper way. He didn't use a lashon, first of all, of neder. And according to many of the Rishonim, he didn't use a lashon of hatpasa. He didn't connect it to something otherwise that is hekdesh, or something that you can make a sur like korban. So those are missing in this language. Is that sufficient enough? Now, shani ochel lecha, that I will eat. Now, lecha is used throughout the Masechta. The word lecha over here means, like it does in the Torah, shelcha, means that of yours. So that means here, shani ochel shelcha, that I will not eat of your items. With regards to this language, there's a big machlok to be shonim as to what the proper language is. It seems Naran himself puts the language as she'ani and not she'eni, although we find alternate girsaot both in the Mishnah here as throughout the Masechta. Tosafot takes up the issue as to what the difference would be between she'ani or she'eni. We'll use the girsa that's in front of us, which seems to be a better girsa, but you should know that she'ani and she'eni are not exactly the same thing. And one would be more proper. It might be that the other one functions as a yad instead of the proper language, and therefore one is able to utilize the other language, even though it may not be the proper language in the case that it's being expressed. So here, a person is taking a neder that he will not eat the items of his friend, or shani toim lecha, or that I will taste of your stuff. Asur, that works. All of these languages work, even though there is a deficit in the language. The deficit in the language, again, is that he didn't use the proper articulation, both in the sense that he didn't use hatpasa, according to those Rishonim require it, as well as the fact that the language that he uses is somewhat circumspect. It doesn't give a direct language. It doesn't tell you, I'm taking a neder. It uses the language of mufrushani, mruchukani, mudrani. These aren't lashonot that otherwise make it clear that you're taking a neder. And nevertheless, they work because they are yadayim. The intent of the individual is so clear through their partial articulation that we're willing to extend it and say that's what he meant. And assuming that is his intent, then what he expressed is a neder, even though he did not comply to the proper way for a person to express a neder. Nevertheless, it works over here when he expresses this in this manner. Also, one should keep in mind when it comes to nidarim, nidre yisur versus nidre agdesh, nidre hekdesh are very easy because in order for someone to make something into hekdesh, you must own it. You can't make someone else's object into hekdesh because you don't own it. You don't control it, you don't own it, and therefore you can't make it hekdesh. On the other hand, if it's your item, you own it and you control it, you can make it into hekdesh. With regards to nidarim, that is not the case. You do not have to own the object in order to make it sur. And that is because nidarim is all about the relationship. It is your relationship to the item, or the item's relationship to someone else. So as we saw in Masechta Ketubot, you have to have a connection to the item in one of two ways. You either need to own the item, or you have to be the person that the neder affects. And in either one of those instances, you control that relationship, and therefore you can make a neder. So if it's your item, you can make it a sur from others in benefiting or utilizing that item. Since it's yours, you can stop others from engaging in that item. That's when you own it. In a case where you don't own the item, what you can do is stop yourself from interacting with that item. Those are the examples that are brought here in our Mishnah. The examples in our Mishnah are where you are taking someone else's food and saying that it's asur to me. Now, it's his object, so you can't change the status of the food vis-a-vis that individual, but you can, in your relationship with that food, affect your relationship and make it asur. So that here is important in terms of nidarim, that nidarim go into effect when one of those two items is true. When you control the object and own the object, or it's about your relationship to the object. What you can't do is make someone else's object a sur on them. Because there you have neither of those. You don't control the object, and you do not control the relationship to the object. So in those cases, your neder does not take effect, and we spoke about that in Masechet Ketubot. The Gemara over there was discussing, when it was comparing cases of selling a field and some sort of engagement within the future, what it was like. The Gemara went through different examples like that and showed that the only time you can have a neder is when you have one of those two items, where you will own the object and control the object, or where you control the relationship with the object. Now the commissioner continues and says, Menuda ani lecha. So now over here, he used another type of language, which is menuda. Menuda is nidui, excommunication. Rabbi Kiva ya chochech bazeh lahachmir. Rabbi Kiva over here, the word chochech is unclear what it means. different interpretations of what the Rechocheich, the Ran says it means to rub together. He rubbed his lips together, meaning that he was uncertain as to what the language of Menudeh was. Does it function like a yad? Does it not function like a yad? Therefore, he was machmir because he didn't know. Since Nedarim are deoraita, will be machmir, and therefore he was machmir. Others say that chocheich over here means to rub against. When you rub something, take off the dirt, you get to the clear answer, and that's what it means, chocheich bazel achmir. When Rabbi Kiva rubbed it, he came to the conclusion that it should be asur, not mitzad safek, but mitzad that it is a language of yad. Or still others suggest that chocheich comes from the word chiyuch, which means to smile, which is a reference to a person's reaction to certain things. So over here, chocheich bazel achmir, that was Rabbi Kiva's reaction to menudeh, was that he smiled in that he reacted in the sense that he thinks it should be lechumra, that we should go to chumra when you use a lashon of menudeh. So now the Gemara asks, kol kinuyei nidarim kinidarim, that it starts out our mesechta with this language of all kinuyei nidarim are like nidarim. Maishna gabi nazir delok tani leku lekuhu. Why, when we begin Mesechet Nazir, does it not enumerate all these different items? Our Mishnah listed four items. Kol kinuyei nidarim kinidarim, v'charamim kecharamim, v'shvot kishvot, unizirot kinizirot. How come when you begin Mesechet Nazir, it doesn't list all four of these items? It just says, kol kinuyei nizirot kinizirot. So why is that different when we start out Nizirot than it is when we start out Mesechet Nidarim? So Maishna Gabe Nazir Delok Tani Lukuluhu, Maishna Gabe Nidarim Dektani Lukulu. Mishum Neder Ushvua Tive Gabe Hadodi. Because the Lashon of Neder and Shvua are written together in the Torah. I read you the Pasuk before, which is Ish Kidor Neder Lashem, Ohi Shava Shvua Lesori Saral Nafsho. Right, so over there you see that Neder and Shvua in the Torah are paired together. Therefore, if I'm going to begin Mesechet Nidarim, I'm going to begin Mesechet Nidarim with Nidarim and Shvuot, because there's a connection between Nidarim and Shvuot. So once I already did that, Mishum de Neder Shvuot Tivei Gabe Adodi, Tani Tartin, and already wrote two of them, came into Tani Tartin, Tani Lekulu. Since I already wrote two of them, therefore, it enumerated the rest of them, which is that of Charamim and Nizirut. So Gemara says, V'litnei Kinui Shvuot Batar Nidarim. So wait a minute, if you're going to do that, and you say to me that the primary source that we're trying to deal with in our Mishnah is Neder and Shvua that are found in the Torah, then the Mishnah should have read, Kol kinuyei nidarim kinidarim, u'shvuot kishvuot. But that's not the way. If you look the way the Mishnah lists it out, it starts out with nidarim and ends with the shvuot. In between nidarim and shvuot, it has charamim. Why did it insert charamim in between those two items? So Gemara says, that's because the litnei kinuyei shvuot batan nidarim, I did the tani nidarim, the mitzar chevtza alei. So now here is a classic brisker chakira here that the Gemara makes, which is the difference between nidarim and shvuot, which will become very important throughout our mesechta, because it leads to the different dinim that are associated with a neder and a shvua, which is that nidarim, the mitzar chevtza alei. When it comes to a neder functions by changing the status of the object. It makes the object asur to me. It's not the gavra, it's not the individual making themselves asur or dictating their behavior, but rather it's telling you that this chefetz, this object, will now be asur. Tani nami charamim, de mitzah chefetze alei. A cherem works in the same manner. A cherem is making something that otherwise is mutar, either la kohanim or the bedekabayit. You now made that object take on a status of kedusha for the kohanim or kedusha for bedekabayit, and you've changed the status of the object. Therefore, anybody's relationship with the object now will be dictated by the isur that sits on this object. So nidarim function in that way, and so do charamim. Lafuke shvua de kasar nafshe min achevza. As opposed to shvua, which functions by changing the status of the gavra, the individual's relationship with the object. By a shvua, the object itself remains mutar. This loaf of bread is totally mutar, but I restrict myself from engaging in that loaf of bread. That is a shvua. So the key words that are used over here is that neder refers to a chefetz. It engages the object itself and makes it asur. And then a shvua ignores the object and talks about the person's relationship with the object. It makes the gavra asur, or it demands something of the gavra of the individual themselves. Now this difference leads to here a machloket rishonim. I pointed out to you here that Tosafot over here says that what happens if you express a neder b'lashon shvua, or you express a shvua b'lashon neder, which is that a person takes something that looks like a shvua, but in the meantime he focuses on the object, or the other way around. A person wants to take a neder, but he takes it by focusing on the person instead of the object. Does that work? So Tosafot over here says, Gabe nidarim, avarav dichtivi ki dor, demashmalah, return alomar agavra. So even though, Tosafot actually points out, first of all, that there's a problem in the pasuk, because the pasuk says, ki dor neder lashem, which it makes it sound like it's talking about the gavra, ki dor neder lashem. Nevertheless, mikom makom tiv ki dor neder, return alomar, then mapis benadur, vizeu achefetz. Talking about hadpasa, which again Tosafot thinks is integral to a neder, and therefore it's referencing the object and not the person. Even though it says that he took a shvua mikom agom gali kra somewhere else, lo tishavu demizar agavra, that you should not take false oaths, or lo tishavu bishmila sheker. All these types of lo tishavu focus on the gavra. So we see from other places in the Torah, even though over here it sounds like it's on the chefetz, that shvua is clearly indicative of a person or a restriction on the person. And then he says, v'yesh lomar dinyan ze shimayo mer koneim shlo ochel. He uses lashon neder, which is korban or koneim, but he focuses on shlo ochel, on the action of the individual, which is not to eat, ki karze, lo amar klum. It does not function whatsoever. And the same is true by shvua, that is expressed as a restriction on the chefetz. So Tosafot over here says, if you switch the language from shvua to neder, or neder to shvua, it doesn't work, because you did not engage or articulate it in the way that a neder functions, or the way that a shvua functions. And that's why the Ran quotes the view of the Rach, the Rav Ben Migash, the Rimigash, as well as the Rashba. On the other hand, he quotes the Ramban as having a different view, that it works, that Ela Vadai Neder, Shamro B'Lashon Shvua, Ushvua B'Lashon Neder, Mahani, it works. Miyu, La Mikar Neder Mikar Shvua. It doesn't work because you are articulating a Neder or Shvua, but Ela Midin Yadotu De Mahani. It's like a Yad. Just like a Yad in the Mishnah expresses something in a subpar form, which is it doesn't use the formulation that you should have used, nevertheless it functions. So too, by a neder and a shvua that are taken in the wrong language, they work, or they are successful, not because you use the right language, but because you use the yad. And it's clear from your language what your intent was and what you wanted to do. So even though you did not articulate it properly, came into piv libo shavim le'asur, since your mouth and your heart are saying the same thing, and that's what you intended for, it is successful, even though you didn't articulate it properly. And therefore, our sugi over here, which is expressing chefetz and gavra, is talking about the ikar. What's the proper way to articulate a neder? What's the proper way to articulate a shvua? But if you expressed it in the wrong form, it would still be successful, not because you did it right, but simply because it functions like in our mission, like a yad, which is that when you articulate sometimes, even though you didn't do it right, because your intent was clear and to express it in a way that's close enough for us to understand what you're saying, it will be successful. The Ran over here discusses an issue that's not really the central theme of what we're discussing here, but something that's unique to Shavuot is whether a Shavua requires Shem Hashem. And that happens to be a machloket rishonim. He quotes from the Rabbeinu Tam, who actually differentiates and says that a shvua mipe atzmo, person who takes a shvua himself, does not require a shem Hashem, but if he's mushba mipe acherim, he does require a shem Hashem, whereas the Ran says he does not understand what the Rabbeinu Tam is saying, and the Ran believes that one does not need a shem Hashem with regards to a shvua. And he says that that position in the Gemara and Sota that requires shem Hashem is a dat yachid, and the Chachamim disagree, although he does bring down the Raivud, and it seemingly agrees with the fact that you require Shem Hashem in order to get Malkot, because the Surei Lav that are expressed in the Torah always mention the Shem Hashem, and therefore in order to garner Malkot for a Shavua, or violating a Shavua, you would have to have the Shem Hashem, but the Isur will exist whether or not one has a Shem Hashem. So now the Gemara asks the question that we mentioned, or the problem in the Mishnah, which is that Patach b'kinuim. Our Mishnah began with kinuim, which says, kol kinuye nidarim kinidarim. Kol kinyan nedarim umefaresh yadot. Yeah, when the Mishnah comes to explicate, it doesn't explicate any kinuim, it simply mentions yadot. That's number one. Ha'omer lechavero mudarani mimcha. Right, so it gives examples of yadot. Vitu, yadot inshe. The word yadot is not even mentioned in the Mishnah. So you have kinuim that are, number one, the opening of the Mishnah, which we have no examples of. And then number two is you have no mention of yadot in the introductory phrases of the Mishnah, yet when you come to bring examples, you're bringing examples of yadot. Others read the Gemara over here as vetu yadot inche ayri bahon. Since when is the Mishnah, or when are people dealing with yadot, that the Mishnah should be explicating on this issue? Who mentioned these things at all? So Gemara says, ayri bahon, it is dealing with them, v'chasurei mechsara, and the Mishnah is missing a little part of its opening here. V'achitani, this is what it should have said. Kol kinuyei nidarim kinidarim. V'yadot nidarim kinidarim. It was missing that second phrase, which is, yes, all kinuyei nidarim are like nidarim, so too yadot nidarim function like nidarim. Then it goes on to express what these are, these yadot are, and the Gemara asks the obvious question, v'lifrosh kinuyim bereisha. Well, once you're going to do that, you begin with kinuyim, then you switch to yadot, which is the opening summary of what we're about to discuss. So then why does the Mishnah jump to discuss yadot and not express those things that are kinuim, that which we'll only do in a couple of Mishnayot. We'll get there on Daf Yud to the kinuim. How come it starts with the yadot and then only gets over to kinuim later? If you're going to keep parallel structure, you would say we opened with a summary of kinuim and yadot, then you do the same thing in the explication. You would have kinuim and then yadot. How come when it starts kinuim yadot, then flips to yadot in the explication and then goes back to kinuim later? So we'll have one answer in the Gemara today, and then tomorrow's Gemara will deal with a second answer. So Gemara says, how the salik meine? He deals with the one that it ended with. How mefaresh bereisha? That it explicates first. So it starts out kinuim yadot, it left off with yadot, so then it gets involved in yadot. Kidetanan. And now the Gemara brings a raft of Mishnayot that are exactly structured in that manner, which is that it gives a summary of what it's going to discuss, and then it engages in the item that it left off with. For instance, Vameh Madlikim, Uvameh Ein Madlikim, you say this every Friday night. So what can you light with? What can you not light with? And then it goes on to express Ein Madlikim. So it gives you the explication of Ein Madlikim, even though that's what was the second summary in the beginning. Vameh Tumnim, Uvameh Ein Tumnim. Again, in the Gemara in Shabbat, what are you allowed to use for Hatmana? And what are you not allowed to use for Hatmana? Then it goes on to explicate Ein Tumnim, what you're not allowed to use for Hatmana. Again, what does a woman go out with when she is wearing certain jewelry or what she's allowed to adorn herself with? Is she allowed to go out with on Shabbat? And what can she not go out with? And then it goes on to express which items she may not go out with. So now the Gemara asks a question. So now are you telling me that this is the standard by which all Mishnayot are governed? Which is anytime the Mishnah gives you a summary in the beginning of what it's going to speak about, it then explicates on the thing that it expressed last. Is that really true? That's none. Don't we have a Mishnah? Yeshnu chalim umanchilim. There are certain individuals who inherit and also grant inheritance. That's, for instance, a father and a son. Father and son both inherit each other and also grant inheritance to each other. Nochlim velo manchilim. There are certain individuals where you inherit from them, but lo manchil, you do not grant them inheritance. For instance, a son to a mother. A mother, he inherits, but he doesn't grant inheritance to them. Ve'elu, and then it goes on to express, nochlim u'manchilin. And then it goes on to express the first thing that it's summarized in the Mishnah, of individuals who are both inheriting and pass inheritance. Yesh mutarot le'balehem v'asurot le'yevnehen. There are certain individuals who are okay to marry their husbands, but they are problematic for their yavam. So for instance, with a Kohen Hejot that married an almana. Kohen Hejot is mutar ba'almana. If his brother is a Kohen Gadol, his brother is a sur and an almana. Or just the opposite. You have things that are mutar li'ibnehem, but surah li'ibnehem would be the opposite case, where a Kohen Gadol marries an almana, which is a sur to him, but is mutar to his brother, who is a Kohen Hejot. Then it goes on to explicate, ve'ilu mutarot li'ibnehem, but surah li'ibnehem. Then it goes on to express the first thing that it summarized at the beginning of the Mishnah. She'yesh tu'unot shemen u'livona. Here it's coming, talking about minachot. In Masechet Minachot, it says there are certain minachot that require both oil and livonah and frankincense, shemen velo livonah, and there's certain things that only require oil but do not require frankincense, which is a minchat nesachim, which only requires oil and not livonah, whereas a mincha or a general mincha of nidava requires both shemen and livonah. So here again, when it goes on to explicate, it says ve'elu tunot shemen ve'livonah. These are the ones that have shemen livonah. Yesh tunot hagasha ve'en tunot tenufa. Again, here in Masechet Menachot, the mincha requires hagasha, which is taking and touching it to the southwestern corner of the mizbeach, and there is tenufa, a wave offering. So it says there that there are certain minachot that require hagasha, touching them to the corner of the mizbeach, but do not require hanafa. They do not require a wave offering. Whereas there are certain ones that require a tnufa, yesh tnufa velo hagasha. There are others that require a wave offering, but do not require hagasha. And then it goes on to explain which ones these are. So for instance, a minchat choteh requires hagasha to the mizbeach, but not a tnufa. On the other hand, the log shemen of a mitzorah requires tnufa and no hagasha. But then it goes on to express, elu tunot hagasha. These are the ones that require hagasha. Yesh b'chor le'nachala ve'en b'chor le'kohen. We have certain times where a person is a firstborn with regards to inheritance, but not a firstborn with regards to the kohen. For instance, if a woman already miscarried before having this child, or this woman was previously married, but it's the first child for the husband, in those cases, he's a b'chor le'nachala, not b'chor le'kohen. Yes, you have b'chor le'kohen ve'en b'chor le'nachala. For instance, where a person has more than one wife. So in terms of this woman, it's a peter rechem, so he is a bechor lekohen, but as far as the husband is concerned, this is not his first child, so he'll not be a bechor lenachala. Ve'ezu bechor lenachala, ve'en bechor lekohen, and then it goes on to explicate the first thing that it mentioned. So Mar says, halein, those ones are mishum de abshule, because they have extra, a lot about them, mifarish, how de patach bereisha. Therefore it explains, or explicates on the thing that is mentioned first. The Ran over here expresses what it means, Avsha. Avsha over here means that there's a lot of dinim that are associated with these items. And since there are many dinim, it wants to get those in first, because that's the one that you want people to remember, because it has a lot of stuff associated with it. So even though it opened, what the Gemara here is saying is that normally, if you have a summary of items in the Mishnah about what you're going to discuss, it would automatically start with the thing that it left off with. When is there an exception to that rule? The exception rule is when it has a lot of, the first thing you mention has a lot of halachot. In that case, we'll jump back to the original item and mention it. Rashi brings another interpretation, which is, avshu means that there's more than two items that are mentioned in the Mishnah. In the basic Mishnayot, which is, for instance, b'meh madikim, u'b'meh ein madikim, there are only two choices. In the other cases over here that are brought examples in the Gemara, in all those cases, there are actually four choices that are brought. The Gemara here only brought two of them. For instance, by nachala. Yesh b'chor le'nachala, v'en b'chor le'kohen. B'chor le'kohen, v'en le'nachala. Yesh b'chor le'nachala u'le'kohen. Yesh eino b'chor lo le'nachala v'lo le'kohen. So here you have four different items, and then it goes back to the original item. So that's the way that Rashi expresses it over here. But those will be exceptions to the rule. The Gemara says, is that really true? V'ha'beheim ha'yotza, v'ma eino yotza, d'lo avshu. So in the case of what an animal is allowed to go out with, or an animal is not allowed to go out with it, below Avsha, according to Rashi, that means that there are only two choices, not four choices. Or according to the second interpretation of Rashi, the one that the Ran brings down, is that they're not of a lot of halachot. Viktani, Yotze Gamal. And even though they're not more halachot with regards to what they're allowed to go out with, nevertheless, the Mishnah goes on to express, Yotze Gamal, goes out to express that which is mentioned first in the Mishnah. Ella Labdavka. The Gemara comes to the conclusion that it doesn't really matter. It's a matter of style. Zimnin mifaresh ha'u depotach bereisha. Zimnin ha'u desalik mifaresh bereisha. Sometimes the Mishnah will explain that which it mentioned first. Sometimes the Mishnah will express that which it left off with. It's a matter of choice. It's a matter of style of the Tana, but it is not something that is fixed in stone. And therefore, our Mishnah has that style. Our Mishnah went in and continued with the items that it left off with. And that is a style of Mishnayot that we find. And what the Gemara just brought you is, there are a large number of Mishnayot that work it this way. There are a large number of Mishnayot that work it that way. There's nothing particular about when or why they do it. It's simply a style. It's a way of presenting the information. Some Tanaim presented it this way. Some Tanaim presented it that way. And so too in our Mishnah, it expressed it in this way. And we're not going to take any significance out of that change in order, because the change of order is a matter of style, not a matter of principle. All right, we're going to stop here on the third line on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph. where the Gemara will give an alternative answer as to why the Mishnah went on to speak about Yadot after it opened speaking about Kinuyim.